This is KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM in Portland. Coming up at 10:30 today, Stage and Studio presents Willamette Radio Workshop's Frankenstein. And at 11 on Democracy Now!, you can hear an archive from an interview from the archives with Rosa Parks. That's coming up at 11 on Democracy Now! Right now, we have an interview from Aaron Ernst. He's here in the studio with his guest, and we'll go to Aaron right now.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the program. I'm Aaron Ernst, and I'm here today with local author David Woolman. He's an author of the book A Left Hand Turn Around the World, Chasing the Mystery and Meaning of All Things Southpaw. And in this book, the author looks at what it means to be a lefty, specifically some of the mysteries also behind left-handedness, such as what is the difference between someone who has a left-handed, who is left-handed, the actual differences in their brain between left-handed and a right-handed person, as well as some of the origins of left-handedness, for instance, where left-handedness actually comes from. And also whether or not there are any advantages, evolutionary advantages to being a left-handed person. Dave, welcome to the program, and thank you for coming in.
Thanks so much, Aaron.
Great. To start off the interview, I was wondering if you could just give us an overview of what it is you tried to accomplish in this book.
Well, for as long as I can remember, being left-handed made me feel a little different. It was never dramatically so, but growing up in a family with three right-handed siblings and right-handed parents and right-handed aunts and uncles, I always felt just a little bit at odds with the norm. And as I began my career as a science journalist later, this interest in handedness never really died out. And I started to wonder whether handedness might be more than just this trivial idiosyncrasy that separates you and me, and things like needing special scissors or bumping into other people at the dining room table. So the book began as a simple quest to answer what I thought at the time were two fundamental questions. What causes left-handedness? And how, if at all, are left-handers different from the right-handed majority? Or, as we say in the fraternity of Southpaw, why are we so cool?
Right. Well, you talk in your book a little bit about the fraternity of the lefty. And I myself am a right-handed person. I apologize.
No problem.
But when you are on the street and, let's say, you run into another person, what are some of the signs that help you identify that the person across from you is a left-handed person as opposed to a more
average, boring,
boring, well, or normal, if you will.
Writing, obviously, is the big tip-off in our culture as to whether someone is right or left-handed. Now, it turns out, if we're going to delve into the science a little later, that that writing isn't necessarily the key determinant for whether someone is left or right-handed, and it's actually a lot muddier than that. But as far as out there in the world, when I'm in a restaurant or when I'm at the checkout counter at New Seasons or something like that, and I see someone writing, I probably notice far too quickly for my own good that someone is left-handed or right-handed. And it's just something I've always zoomed in on. I don't really know why, except for the obvious reason that I stood out and am looking for those people who are like-minded or like-handed.
Right, right. And let's talk a little bit more about standing out. You say in your book that 10 to 12% of the general population is left-handed, which means the majority, or the obviously 88 to 90% of the population
is
right-handed. Yeah, quick math right off the top of my head there. And so you could probably say that the physical world has therefore been built for right-handed people. What are some of the things that you would notice that just about how the world around us is constructed that I wouldn't because I am a right-handed person?
My favorite store for lefty stuff is this little shop in London called Anything Left-Handed, and they have everything from garden shears to ladles with a tilt built, you know, that is opposite than what you'd get at most stores. And then there's scissors and corkscrews and coffee pots and mugs and all this borderline kitsch stuff that a lot of left-handers know about. But to give you a small indication of how much further these sort of microscopic inconveniences go, the other day I was cleaning, I was actually just wiping crumbs off of our wooden dining room table with my left hand, and I end up scratching this nice wood table with my wedding ring. mm-hmm. because I'm using my preferred hand to do the wiping of the crumbs. But that's also where my wedding ring is.
Right.
And when I play tennis, I have to take the wedding ring off because I'm holding the tennis racket in the left hand, and it doesn't really go well with the ring on my ring finger. And so those are the kind of little things.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever cultural reasons, wedding rings ended up on the left hand, and right-handers never really think about the ring getting in the way of dominant hand activities because mm-hmm. the dominant hand is naked, I guess.
Okay. So there might be some physical differences that it's almost an anti-lefty bias in the world around us. And in your book, you also talk about the anti-lefty bias in the English language.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if you could read a selection here of your book that talks a little bit about that and gives some examples of this anti-lefty bias in the English language.
Sure. And, I also want to add that a lot of the sort of anti-lefty construction or kitchen appliances or language, while important and interesting, and you should go buy a lefty ruler for your five-year-old kind of thing, it's not the crux of the book, and I'm trying to have fun with this stuff, and that's why I really like that you want to hear this passage about language, because I think it really illustrates that, there's a lot to laugh at about this topic as
well. And I do want to reiterate that this book is about the science of left-handedness, and I think some of the history that you give is very interesting about sort of the biases that lefties have, but again, this is definitely not a sort of down-with-righty manifesto.
Right. Okay. So I believe this is from the second chapter of the book. It's called The Bend Sinister.
Mm-hmm.
And in that chapter, I'm talking about history of different perceptions about handedness and mm-hmm. anti-lefty lingo. And The Bend Sinister is just one of my favorite terms for left-handedness. It's also the title of a 1964 book by Nabokov that actually has nothing to do with handedness as far as I can tell. But in any case, this is the passage.
Okay, thank you.
Need a few more examples on the anti-lefty language front? How about born from the left side of the bed for a child born out of wedlock? A left-handed marriage for an adulterous act? Left-handed wisdom for faulty reasoning? And a left-handed wife, meaning a mistress or someone who obviously lacks righteousness? The grand prize in the annals of anti-left lingo, however, has to go to a 1950 study in Great Britain cataloging colloquialisms for left-handedness in different parts of the country. The list of 87 terms is hilarious in its entirety, but the quick R-rated sampler includes skivvy-handed, scrummy-handed, caggy-fisted, cock-fisted, gibble-fisted, and cunny and bollock-handed. A smart sportscaster somewhere could have a field day with these descriptors.
Great. Thank you for reading that. And again, I do want to reiterate that your book is not complaining about sort of the left being a left-handed person in a right-handed minority.
Stuff really matters, but you don't want to a sort of long laundry list of trivia about anti-lefty, mm-hmm. righty bias construction in our world, I think, would only go so far as far as capturing people's interests goes.
Right, right. So I'd like to switch gears a little bit and talk about the science of left-handedness, because that really is what your book focuses mainly on. And it's a pretty dense subject, and it's hard. I'm going to try to approach it by first asking you to explain some of the differences in the structure of the brains between someone who's left-handed and right-handed. And I am by no means a neurologist, and my science background is weak, and that's another reason I like this book, because it's very accessible when it comes to the science of it. And to get at it, I'd like to talk a little bit about something, the way that I guess all people's brains are wired, and talking about contralateral control.
Mm-hmm.
And just please correct me if I'm wrong here, if I don't have
sure,
all the facts here. But so with contralateral control, my brain or your brain, the human brain, is wired such that the left hemisphere, the motor cortex in the left hemisphere, controls the right-hand side of my body.
Correct.
And conversely, the right motor cortex in my right hemisphere controls the left-hand side of my body.
Perfect.
All right, great. So having said that, there is no difference between my brain, my right-handed brain, and your left-handed brain over here in that wiring, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So what about language? Is language located? You visited Paris to kind of look into the idea of where language is located, if it's different in the left-handed brain versus the right-handed brain. Can you talk just a little
sure.
bit more about that?
Well, probably one of my favorite reporting excursions for the trip was mm-hmm. when I went to Paris, and I went to a museum there to visit two 19th century brains that are in two glass jars over there.
Mm-hmm.
And the brains belonged to patients of a scientist named Paul Broca,
mm-hmm.
who people in the sciences probably recognize the name because he was the first researcher to determine that the two sides of the brain differ in serious and seriously interesting ways.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was he had these two patients sort of back to back, and before they died, he noticed that they had severe language impairment. One guy, his nickname was Tan, T-A-N, mm-hmm. I think is what the textbooks say, because that was the only utterance that he could come up with.
Mm-hmm.
And when Broca did a postmortem on these brains, he found strikingly similar injury as far as the location of the injury
mm-hmm.
and the left front area of these two brains.
Okay.
And that's when he suggested that the seat of language and speech capability is this area of the left hemisphere of the brain.
So this is just speaking but not comprehending.
Right. And immediately, as soon as I say something like that, I'm threatening to oversimplify much more complicated...
But please do oversimplify.
much more complicated neurology, because speech versus comprehension versus syntax, all these things, there's actually slightly different areas of the brain. But in simplest terms, when you talk about the seat of language capability in the brain, you're usually talking about Broca's area.
Okay.
And for most people, that spot is in the left hemisphere. However...
When you say most people, do you mean...
Well, here's the rub, is that 99... The best research seems to say that 98-99% of all right-handed people
okay.
have speech headquartered in the left hemisphere of the brain, as Broca determined.
So for me, speaking to you here right now, that's because the left part of my brain is...
Unless you're of that 1%.
Okay.
And... there would be nothing wrong with you if that were the case.
Mm-hmm.
But it broke his day when people brought some exceptions to him
mm-hmm.
of patients who couldn't talk, but the left hemisphere was fine, or vice versa. They had the same speech impairment, but they had a right hemisphere injury. You know, people said, aha, your theory is wrong.
Okay.
Or what he suggested was, well, maybe these people, you know, they're left-handed or something like that. And it just kind of came out in passing and faded, and it didn't turn out to be right. But... the key is
So when you say not right, that people were saying that the right hand part this was an exception to his rule,
right,
and that therefore his data was wrong. But
right.
In order to explain it, he said, well, if the right side part of the brain is damaged, maybe these people are left-handed.
Right,
is what
and I can okay. do. Let me do a better job explaining that for you, because it's tricky. But essentially, he saw these two minority populations
okay.
that had this asymmetry in common, or so he thought.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have the small minority of people who are left-handed,
okay.
and now we're noticing we have the small minority of people with language headquartered in the right hemisphere. Maybe they're the same.
Okay.
And that was sort of the running theory, but he didn't really investigate it, and everyone grabbed the ball and ran with it.
Okay.
And for 50 years or so, they had this misperception that that was the rule.
That people who are left-handed actually speak from the right side of their brain.
Yeah, have speech headquartered in the right side of the brain. And
which is different, obviously, than...
Which is interesting for a number of reasons, and I mentioned this in the book, one of which is people at that time probably wouldn't have been very keen to admit that they were left-handed, because they would have had it sort of beaten out of them with
mm-hmm.
writing and eating. It wasn't culturally appropriate. But the other reason it's interesting is because it's incorrect. And the key to all of this that I think probably piqued your interest is that while 99% or so of right-handed people have speech headquartered in the left hemisphere, I know mm-hmm. all the back and forth is crazy, among lefties, about 70% of left-handers have speech headquartered in the left hemisphere.
Hmm, okay.
And what's interesting and tricky and fascinating about that is that it's not the same. That's a significant difference. But it is also not this easy opposite
mm-hmm.
rule, which probably would make life so much simpler as far as studying this puzzle of handedness.
Mm-hmm.
There you have it.
Thank you. Let's talk again about another possible difference between the structure of someone who's the brain structure of someone who's right-handed versus left-handed, and that has to do with the corpus callosum. Some of the research that you present in your book suggests that the corpus callosum, can you just explain what the corpus callosum is, what it does, and how that might be different for right-handed versus left-handed people?
And again, some of this is quite controversial and exciting in present-day science, mm-hmm. and so to speak assertively about it sometimes makes you feel like you're walking on thin ice. But on the other hand, it's really exciting research to me, at least, mm-hmm. because it's delving into this legitimate difference between subgroups of the population you don't normally think about.
Mm-hmm.
So the best research right now suggests that...
And can you just give us, what is the corpus callosum in...
Corpus callosum is a bridging bundle of fibers that connects the left and right hemispheres of the brain.
Okay, thank you.
So it's almost like the description I use in the book is you have to imagine the brain is like a melon, and it's mostly cut in half.
Okay.
But you didn't make a clean cut, and so in the middle there's still this stringy bundle of fruit connecting left and right.
Okay.
So you can't pull it apart completely, because otherwise the brain is an incredibly divided organ.
Mm-hmm.
But so much information gets passed back and forth across this bridging bundle of fiber.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's the corpus callosum. And the research seems to say that in general,
mm-hmm.
you have to set aside for a minute all the controversy about varying definitions of what makes you righty, what makes me lefty, the mixed-handedness and all this stuff. But the research seems to suggest that left-handers have less asymmetry or slightly more symmetry in brain function mm-hmm. than right-handers. Now, that's as an aggregate, which is the first of many disclaimers to come, I guess. And that means that you and me sitting here, our brains might be identically structured.
Okay.
But as an aggregate population, when you run people through different cognitive psychology tests and things like that, left-handers seem to demonstrate more activation in both hemispheres for certain tasks than an aggregate population of right-handers or a comparative population of right-handers. How am I doing? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does make sense. And so what does that mean in practice?
I guess the answer to that question is really that this is such a young area of science that they don't really know. And they don't know in the same sense that when people look at men and women, women seem to also demonstrate, as an aggregate, more symmetry or less asymmetry between in brain function. And some people will run right to this controversy about Larry Summers at Harvard and his suggestion that maybe women are less, and you know, are not engineered to be scientists and all this kind of controversial things. And that's not really the point. The point is that I think, personally, it's a much more humble look at the brain and the diversity of people and, you know, culture and religion and history and geography. These are all things that make us wonderfully diverse. But we also have to remember that the very structure of our brains and the varying structure of all of our different brains also makes us, I think, diverse. And so without sort of coming down on some thundering conclusion that more asymmetrical brains do this and more symmetrical brains do that, it's really an exploration into our difference.
And speaking of differences, and again, I don't want to get into controversy here, but in your book you also mentioned that there's a higher percentage of people with left-handed brains who experience problems, language problems, stuttering, reading disabilities, and even schizophrenics. Is that true? And if so, where does that come from?
Well, I think it's probably not true.
Okay.
But I think more research needs to be done on those kind of questions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can immediately imagine someone saying, well, this guy's left-hander who's talking on the radio right now. Of course he doesn't think that kind of thing's true. He's going to stick up for his people. But the real thing...
Your people, okay.
Oh, yeah, my people. But the real issue at hand is that more than a century of research into the question of lefty versus righty difference has really been sort of about... not so subtly looking for defects among the left-handed population.
Okay.
And almost all of that research has been doomed as far as the methodology of the research is
so
concerned.
So not valid research.
Right.
Okay.
And so you get these studies. A big one was in the 1980s. There was a study that suggested that left-handed people die younger than right-handers. And it was later just completely debunked and eviscerated, and it was sloppy and rubbish. And yet the media had jumped on it with such interest that, you know, it was almost like in a snap there was an urban myth created right there and then, and people are still trying to dismantle it. And so with the stuttering and things like that, that might, again, be the same kind of problem. And if we have time, let me just...
I want to go on to the origins of handedness next. So if people want to get more into that, they can obviously purchase your book. The next area that I do want to talk about is where handedness comes from. And again, this is a really dense topic, goes into genetics, and we only have about 5 minutes left. So if you could summarize it fairly well, that would be great. I guess you could break down the theories that you looked at into possible environmental causes, genetic causes, and biomechanical causes of left-handedness.
Right.
Can you go ahead, start out with environmental examples of why people thought, you know, where does left-handedness come from? Why are you left-handed versus me, who appears to be more quote-unquote normal when you look at the average population?
Well, I think going as far back as Plato, people believed that handedness was shaped by your upbringing and by your earliest years, and that if you were raised by proper parents and they handed you a pen to the right hand and they taught you to eat with the proper hand, then you would go on to become a proper right-hander.
Okay.
And everything would be hunky-dory. But later, these environmental theories began to shift sort of away from environmental in the cultural sense, and he moved toward what is the environment that a fetus is exposed to in the womb, and he started to look at the biochemistry in the womb, and that, no pun intended, gave birth to some theories about exposure to slightly higher testosterone levels in the womb maybe would lead to left-handedness and things like that.
A fetus is exposed to testosterone, they become left-handed. It isn't
or more testosterone,
right.
and
so you would have theoretically more testosterone,
right? And the way I put it in my book is when I'm feeling like my most Schwarzenegger, my most macho, that's when I'm really bummed out that this theory is probably wrong.
Okay,
because the data just didn't hold up after later scrutiny. But the science is important, and I should say there are still pockets of believers in, you know, not sort of in the New Agey sense, but there are still pockets of support for this kind of theory. And the best example of that is actually in the past 3 or 4 weeks, there was enormous media coverage of a Dutch study suggesting that left-handed women were more likely to get breast cancer. And I've written about this a little bit on my website now because it's far too late to get into the book.
And that website being?
www.alefthandturn.com. Thanks very much. So the reason that is interesting is because, well, one reason it's interesting is that I think it's sort of BS, and I explain why the methodology there is probably wrong, but the quick version is they just asked their subjects if they were left or right-handed. They didn't do a more thorough laboratory assessment of people's handedness. But the other reason that's interesting is that they say maybe the cause for this is exposure to hormones in the womb. Again, going back to this older theory of what causes left-handedness, maybe it has to do with sort of the biochemistry environment.
Okay, so that's the biochemistry. What about the genetics? Is there a left-handed gene? And there are so many theories out there. It's going to be impossible in the next 2 minutes for you to summarize this. But if you could, is there a possible genetic link as well?
Well, I think there is. And the front-runner model for what causes left-handedness is genetic. What makes it tricky and what makes it harder to, you know, hard to describe in a minute and a half is that it's not something that breeds true, like hemophilia or sickle cell anemia, or, you know, we drew those four boxed squares in ninth grade biology class to teach us about dominant recessive genes and all that. The lefty thing, if the gene works and if they find the gene for this thing, the way the model works is if you don't get the gene, you're right-handed. And if you do get this gene, you're still going to be right-handed unless... if you imagine the gene were like Las Vegas die, and you roll the die, unless you get snake eyes, you're still going to be right-handed.
Okay.
So the gene confers chance to be left-handed.
Okay, so and this is the right shift theory that you talk
exactly.
about in the book. And again, I do want to say...
Which is a crazy name for it.
Yeah. there are a lot of fascinating theories that you go into. And if people want to pick up the book, I think they'll be able to look through each of the theories. There's also one about a biomechanical theory related to handedness, and I don't think we have time to go into that, but sort of that as the body is embryos developing, there may be a gene out there that stops, that changes the way that symmetry develops in the body. And again, that's fascinating to think about that actually something that happens at the cellular level could possibly be related to handedness. So again, mm-hmm. people should go out and purchase the book. And we have about a minute left. And in conclusion, if this is going to be a pretty tough question, the next question, but if someone has a left-handed person as a relative, would this make a good gift for them?
That's a really hard question. I'd have to say yes.
Okay.
It would make a good gift.
And where
and you can get it at any bookstore, and you can get it at www.alefthandturn.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be doing a reading at Powell's on November 1st. And if you've heard this interview and want to bombard me with some other tough questions, please come and share with me your stories as well about handedness.
Okay, and is there anything else you'd like our listeners to know about this book? Just sort of in conclusion.
Well, for me, it was really important to be able to jump freely between genres, you know, so I was writing science for one chapter and travel the next and pop culture and then some humor, and I felt like for a topic with such breadth as left-handedness, it would be best written in a way that sort of tried to encompass all these things and bring it all under the tent. I'm not sure if I pulled that off, but we'll see.
Okay, great. And thank you again for coming in to talk with us. Again, the name of the book is The Left-Hand Turn Around the World, Chasing the Mysteries and Meaning of All Things Southpaw. Thank you again for coming in, and hopefully some of our listeners will see you at your reading at Powell's, which is November 1st. Okay, thank you very much,
Aaron.
And again, this is David Woolman, Left Hand Turn Around the World, and he will be giving a reading at Powell's on November 1st. Thank you very much.